Welcome to the old school meeting of Overeaters Anonymous, featuring speakers with long-term abstinence. This meeting was born online, and it's going to stay that way. That means you can attend live on Tuesday evenings at 6:30 Pacific. And now, our speaker.
Now time for me to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now, including how and why I stay abstinent. Hi, everybody. My name is Erica. I'm a compulsive overeater. So I know some of you on this call. It's nice to see you. To qualify, I currently have 17 years on my way to 18 years in May of abstinence out of relapse. And I will get into that shortly. I just want to thank Megan for asking me to share. And let me get this on gallery so I can see more people. Anyway, as I mentioned, you know, relapse is a part of my story. And I've had two relapses in my time. I first came into program in 1991. I'm from Los Angeles. I've lived in Colorado for a little over 3 years. So I am a San Fernando Valley girl. Although don't be sad, I love it in Colorado, and you could not pay me enough money to come back to Los Angeles. But I have made 8 trips back. My mom recently passed from dementia, so I was back very often to see her. So anyway, I first came into program in 1991. I was 19 years old, and I was 250 pounds. In fact, I could share the picture with you. Let's see if I can do this properly. So this is me on the right, at I think just about my top weight. I'm currently down over 100 pounds and super, super grateful. And I know for a darn fact it's not me that's doing it. So let me stop this sharing business here. Okay, so I first came in 1991. My mom was my Eskimo and I was around for 5 years. I learned that I needed to work the steps. I went to 2 meetings a week. They were both in North Hollywood, the Tuesday and Thursday at the Rec Center. And my world was very, very small. My program life was very small. My sponsor was on a pedestal. And when things started getting shaky and I fell out with my 2 OA friends and my sponsor and I parted ways, my food got worse and worse. And I took a candle for 5 years and I was like, oh my gosh, am I even abstinent? Which for me was a very painful place to be in. And shortly, I think not too far after that, I went to Hawaii with a fellow and we ate our way through Hawaii. And then we got in a big fight and I flew home. I spent an extra $600-$700 to fly home early because I was pissed and I was eating like there was no tomorrow. And shortly thereafter, I left for 8 years. I was like, this OA thing, no. I have to mention that in those meetings, I think it was my second year, I came in as an agnostic and I was sitting in that room in North Hollywood and somebody shared, I think it was the speaker, that God, her higher power, was with her in this life and taking care of her and loving her and would be with her in the next realm, whatever that would look like, in the same way. And I had this huge wave come over me of like kind of similar to the big book where it says, you know, who are you to say there is no God? And from that day on, I have had a belief in God. I haven't necessarily had a reliance upon God, but that's a whole other story. So I always want to mention that because that is the key moment in my life of having a huge spiritual awakening. And fast forward, I'm actually a licensed minister now. I went to school for many years to be a minister, and it just cracks me up that I started out as an agnostic, and it was OA that gave me that gift. So I left for 8 years and then I came back on my knees. I was, well, I don't know so much. I was on my knees, but I was also very ego-centered and I had yo-yoed up and down. And my other addiction was love addiction. So if there was somebody in my life I was interested in, I would somehow diet down to kind of a normal weight. And then I'd always go back up. And I tried, you know, everything you can think of, except for wiring my jaw shut. But I came back in 2002 and I knew I had to work the steps. I started with an APOR sponsor, applied principles of alcoholic recovery, I believe is what it was. And it's a very in-depth, lots of writing, lots of step work, lots of AA comes of age and the big book. And I needed to know that my ego and my disease like wakes up every morning refreshed and revitalized and wanting me to die. That's what my ego does. So I had 3 years of abstinence, and in that abstinence, I would have, it was a technical abstinence, I always like to say. I was technically abstinent, but every so often I would have binges within my meals, and they got closer together. And I got to a certain weight, and I wasn't happy with the weight. And so suddenly it was like I was giving it to God a lot. And then I was like, oh no, I think I am going to take my will back and control this thing, because where are the cash and prizes? Where is the guy? Where's the job? Where's the, you know, everything that I thought I would get once I was thin? I was under the illusion that if I was thin, there would be no problems. I seriously thought that. I know a lot of you have felt that way in your life. I was under that impression until I got thin and all my problems were still there. I had to like really get that. My food got shaky and it got bad. And I remember calling people from like the parking lot of Whole Foods going, I'm going to go in there and get my binge foods. And am I even abstinent anymore? And once it was decided I wasn't abstinent anymore, then I had gained 24 pounds, and then it was just like off to the races, and I ballooned up to 200 and I believe it was 30 pounds around there.
I was six.
Thank you. And the gift was, is that I did not leave the rooms. I let you guys see me. I was very quiet though. I kept a lot of this to myself. It was interesting how people would come up to me and go, I can see that you're gaining weight. You know, like I didn't know that I was out of control. Like I really didn't need that to happen. But I also realized I had to start talking and start telling my fellows that I was binging, that I was eating before meetings and after meetings, that I was no longer abstinent, that I was in a severe amount of pain. My relapse was probably one of the most painful and excruciating things I have ever been through. And I remember standing outside the Darby office. For those of you that know, that was the OA San Fernando Valley's office in Reseda. And it was after a meeting, and I was standing with a fellow who was complaining about something in her life. And I looked at her and I said, but you're abstinent. You're abstinent, and I can't even get one day. Like I couldn't believe that I had thrown out this amazing thing called abstinence. And up on the wall, it said, you know, abstinence is the most important thing without exception. And I was at a 100 pounders meeting, and I was at the podium and I was crying. And I read that to everybody. And I said, when is this going to be the most important thing for me again? When is this going to happen? And getting out of my relapse took a lot of praying and beseeching and writing and begging. Like I can't tell you how many people I asked to sponsor me. One lady was like, this is the third time you have asked me, my dear, and I'm not available. The miracle was that she said, but I know somebody who is, and why don't you call her? And it was definitely a God shot, because I'm one of those, or at least I was, where I needed to vet the person that would be my sponsor. I needed to know their lineage and everything about them, and did they have what I wanted? Bah, 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 bah. Well, my relapse was, I could tell you it was a year, but it wasn't. It was like 7 months. And what it did to me was it brought me to my knees. I mean, it brought me to my knees, and I became very clear that this disease wants me dead. It wants me to die in a special size box. It wants me to lose my limbs and my eyesight. It wants me to live a sheltered little life in four, you know, a little box with four white walls, and I never leave that, only to get my food. I only went out to get food and to work to make the money to eat my food. I had to leave jobs. I dropped out of high school when I was, you know, 19. I repeated a grade. I didn't have relationships. I had very few friendships. I mean, the list goes on and on. The other thing I got in my relapse was that I needed to understand like 100% that I'm powerless over food. Step one, I needed to really understand that. I thought, because people told me, you know, when you walk in the doors of OA, you're admitting you're powerless over food just by coming. And that's step one right there. And For me, that was not step one. I had to understand that I was not in control of this thing. And that was a huge turning point for me, because the only way I would stop meddling in all of it was to get that I wasn't going to win. I was not going to win, because I tried to win oh so many, many times. Oh my God. And as I said, it made my abstinence so, so precious, more precious than anything, any amount of money, any relationship, because I know if I eat, all is lost. It also gave me sober eating. And I used to talk to people. I called this lady Barbara. She's got probably 38 years now or something. Barbara O. And I said, how do you not eat no matter what? And she goes, well, I just don't. I made the decision that I wasn't going to eat no matter what. And I was like, what are you talking about, lady? Like, this is insanity. And she goes, well, I don't know what to tell you. But like, so for me, well, by the way, I hung up after being very nice and kind, and then I threw my phone across the car because I was like so pissed. Like, what do you mean you don't eat no matter what? And what that equated for me was, I go to my higher power and I go to the program no matter what. I do not eat no matter what. And what my abstinence looks like is, there's three parts of my food or how I eat. There's my alcoholic food list that is not on my abstinence, because I put all those foods on my abstinence and then I laminated the card and then I ate all those foods anyway. Like, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. So my alcoholic food list, I'm very clear on what those are. I didn't have to hem and haw about it. I knew out of relapse exactly what foods triggered me. And, you know, people say, oh, I can binge on broccoli. Well, yeah, once the phenomenon of craving is triggered, of course I can binge on broccoli. But what are the foods that take me there? What are the foods that I cannot stop the monkey mind around?
Last six.
Thank you. Then there's my abstinence. I don't eat in between meals no matter what. I eat three meals and up to three snacks. I'm hypoglycemic. I have tried to eat less meals and it hasn't gone well for me as far as like my blood sugar, but I am continually open to a doctor's direction with that. And I've had to learn how to be malleable and to follow direction. It's always cleared with my sponsor. And so there's that. And then there's my food plan. And I was taught that my abstinence is perfect, black and white. Like, if an alcoholic takes a drink, they're no longer sober. If I take a bite in between my meals, I'm no longer abstinent. But my food plan can be imperfect. The thing with me is, I don't know, I put them all on the same plane. So if I eat my alcoholic foods, to me, I'm not abstinent. I know it sounds like splitting hairs, but I just learned that my food is weighed and measured. I know what foods I need for my body. And I also have an absolute respect for all of them. And as it talks about in the big book, you know, lack of power is my dilemma. So my food, it's in God's hands. And I've had many times where I, you know, especially in the beginning, like I committed all of my food for the first year and texted any changes. I committed my food in the morning, texted any changes during the day, and then sent them with my 10 step at night what I actually ate. And I needed to be 100% honest about what I was eating. In the very beginning, I didn't know if I could go one meal without a hot fudge sundae. And so those of you that know Holly G, I committed to her that for lunch, I would have a salad, but for dinner, I might have a hot fudge sundae. That's how my first like few days of abstinence started. I never had the sundae, but I needed to like be able to go. So I'm running out of time as I see this timer counting down. So, I mean, the last 17 years, I've walked through a chronic illness. I've walked through being diagnosed with a form of congestive heart failure that was probably the result of using fen-phen and ephedra. I can't prove it though. I've walked through not being able to support myself and not having a home of my own for over a year. I've walked through in October, my mom passed. I'm an only child. I was her power of attorney, and you know, people warned me that you could eat because of the grief. And I made the conscious choice that this was not going to be the thing that I would eat over. And having said that, the pain of losing my mom, it is very, I've just learned that it's okay to feel the pain. And I've tried to my best ability to walk through the grief and feel it as much as possible, because I do believe if I store that grief, it's going to come out in other ways, and being sick or being mean to other people, blah, blah, blah. I did mention that I moved up to Colorado 3.5 years ago. 3 weeks into moving up here, I met my now boyfriend. I haven't had a relationship in 15 years. So here I am in a committed partnership with somebody, and talk about all the stuff that brings up. And by the way, he's a sugar addict, and his food is not my food. And I do want to mention, I had gained, over the last 2 years, I had gained like 20 something pounds in abstinence, eating the same foods. And I went to doctors about it. I talked to my sponsor about it. I talked to everybody about it, and they said, don't change anything. Keep praying, keep turning it over. And then finally, I was introduced to a book about women and hormones. And it turned out I was eating too much natural sugar. And my grams got cut by 2/3. I started lifting weights 3 times a week. And what was the other thing I did? Oh, I ate more fat, more natural fat. And I've lost 25 pounds. I never thought that would happen. I was really working on accepting that I was heavier, but now I'm like, okay. And I'm working in concert with my sponsor and the people that guide me to make sure that, you know, this is a healthy, healthy thing for me. So all I can say is my time is almost out, that for those of you that are struggling, when I was in relapse, I looked at this program like it was, like I was in outpatient for an eating disorder unit. I went to an in-person meeting almost every day. I made at least one phone call a day. I worked the steps like my life depended on it, and I still do. And I work a robust program. I'm not as superstitious as I once was. Like if I don't do my writing in the morning, like the hell, all the earth is going to swallow me up. No. But I do almost every day do step work, or I'm in the big book. I do talk to my sponsor every week. I do send a 10 step every night. I'm on 3 to 4 meetings a week. I'm in 2 other programs. Yay me. And I'm always on this quest to deepen my faith in God, because while I do not eat today and I do not use food today, I also have struggles with, you know, even as a minister, can I trust you enough today, God, to let go in any area, in any area? So this program is the cornerstone of every other thing in my life. And, you know, just the gratitude is just endless. Like, thank you, God, for this program. And thank you that I am not sitting in my room surrounded by bags of food wishing I were dead, because that's where I'd be today. So that's it. Thank you.